got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Our next guest is inside the inner sanctum. Is he inside or in the inner sanctum? I don't know. He's behind the curtain at the University of Oregon. He's the editor-in-chief, GoDucks.com, formerly of the Eugene Register Guard. Did a fantastic job in his time in the newspaper world. I have a lot of respect for him. He was in Paris for the Olympics. He's now sitting on the cusp of a Big Ten season at Oregon, and the coverage and the excitement that goes with that. Rob Mosley joining us now. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am well. I heard you were in Paris for the Olympics. Kelly Graves spilled the beans. Give us an idea. Let's start there. First of all, you made the right choice going to the Olympics instead of Big Ten Media Day. You could have got that anywhere. But what was that a tough decision, or you know, what went through your mind when you were picking between the two of those?
So the decision to go to the Olympics, I mean, that was in motion like for like 2 years. Like I want to say, like, my wife and I bought our first set of tickets like 18 months before or something like that. So it was, that was well in motion. We were kind of pot committed, as they say, before the conference realignment even happened. So it was very strange, you know, particularly on August 2nd, when Oregon officially joined the Big Ten. It was very strange to be halfway around the world for that. But, again, I had plenty of time to kind of wrap my head around that reality and understand that that was going to be the case. So, but, yeah, it was, I mean, that experience from, you know, being in Paris to being at my first Olympic Games to having a whole bunch of Oregon kids that obviously meant a lot to me personally to cheer for, there was no second guessing ultimately, no regret for anything like that.
How did you approach sort of, you know, how you were going to, I'll say, cover the Olympics? Because I know that I've covered them as a journalist. The first time I did it, I was so scattered, Rob. I didn't realize how big it was and how exhausting it was every day and emotional it was every day. And, but how did you and your wife decide to kind of strategically approach the Olympics?
So, yeah, it was, you know, the reason we went is because it was kind of her, like, top of her bucket list. And I'm just kind of down for doing fun things. So I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Why not?
The lucky thing for us, because as soon as we decided to go, it was, hey, you know, she, again, being, you know, her kind of dream to go, she wanted a breadth of experience. But we also knew there was a chance to see some Oregon kids, too. And fortunately between track and field and basketball, you know, most of the kids with Oregon ties were pretty concentrated in those two worlds. So we, you know, in terms of procuring tickets, we could really focus on basketball and track. And then, you know, we went to a tennis match because it was at Roland Garros, and we happened to see the tennis match where Alcaraz and Nadal lost to the American duo. Maybe saw Rafael Nadal's last match on the main court there at Roland Garros. So that was something. You know, we saw a swimming preliminary that had Katie Ledecky in it and Marchand from France. So we could say we saw them. It was just a morning preliminary. But we went to a fencing. We went to a couple of beach volleyballs. You know, some other things to kind of like check up some different boxes. But, yeah, we went to a lot of basketball and a lot of track and field. And I think I want to say there were 21 athletes, you know, that we considered ducks over there.
Wow.
And I think we saw all but four of them at least once. So it was pretty exciting.
The, you know, the experience, I was surprised when I went because it's such an international thing, and you see athletes kind of walking about sometimes, especially during the middle or the end of the Olympics after they've competed or whatever. And, you know, what advice do you give to people who have never been, who might consider going in LA or maybe in a future Olympics?
You know, that's a good question. I think you just, the way in the kind of the social media era now, the way you can kind of stay on top of, you know, official Olympics accounts and organizing committee accounts. I think there's a lot of value in that, in really taking the long view and making sure you're following all the outlets that are going to have news about transportation and housing. And obviously secure, you know, a hotel room or an Airbnb or whatever early. But then, you know, have a plan too for what you want to see. But also you just, I think anytime you travel internationally in particular, you just have to be willing to be flexible too. The resale ticketing platform that at least was online in Paris, I don't know about other Olympics, but I would hope that would be employed by LA as well, made it really easy to kind of change plans on the fly. You know, for instance, we had bought some indoor volleyball tickets because we were hoping that Brooke Nunaviller, who played here at Oregon, might play for Team USA. That didn't end up being the case. So we had a day, and that happened to be the day where the Team USA women were playing Team Germany women, so Sabrina Ionescu versus Satu Sabali. It involved taking a train to Lille, but the resale platform made it pretty easy for us to procure some tickets and kind of change our plans. So, you know, just be flexible, be willing to roll with the punches, and you know, just be ready to have a great time kind of no matter what the specific details of your experience day-to-day look like. Because, yeah, it is – it's amazing, but I do have to say I was struck a couple different times because when you talk about the international flavor to it, you know, when the world championships in track and field were here, you know, it kind of felt like an Olympics style event here. The world came to Eugene literally for 10 days there. And so to go to the Olympics and obviously it being in Paris was different, but to feel like, yeah, it's crazy that Eugene, Oregon hosted an event that was kind of like this. And we were there for both of the world records that were set in track and field, Sidney McLaughlin in the 400 hurdles and Mondo in the pole vault in Paris. I've seen both of them previously set world records in those events in Eugene at Hayward Field. And it was so striking to know that, like, we are so lucky that to have events of that caliber come here regularly, at least in track and field. That was really striking.
What about Paris? Because the idea, like all those venues, obviously on television were shown as, look at volleyball in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower and look how beautiful it is. And, you know, what was that like to kind of look up and see that scenery around the Olympic venues?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I had been to Paris once before, but only for a couple days, a little over 10 years ago. And so, yeah, definitely part of the attraction to me was to go back and really kind of sink my teeth into that city a little more. We stayed in an Airbnb that was kind of it was in Paris proper, but kind of outside the main Olympics footprint. And so we got to have a sense of kind of experience pockets of the town that weren't caught up in the Olympic hoopla. But then obviously I think the town did a pretty great job of just welcoming people. You know, there were certainly some businesses you'd walk by and, you know, they were like, hey, we're on vacation until the end of the Olympics. And I give those people credit for saying, you know what, I don't feel like dealing with this. I'm out of here. And everybody else who stuck around was really, really welcoming too. So that was great. But the history of some of those venues and the job they did, again, yeah, beach volleyball in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower, you know, fencing at the Grand Palais. We did go to one session of that. We didn't get out to Versailles where equestrian was, but, you know, to be able to watch events like in Versailles for people who made that trek. They just did an amazing job of incorporating kind of classic, kind of touristy Paris into the Olympics. And the transportation was amazing. Getting around town was amazing. It's a high bar for L.A. to set or to reach. But I do think, too, L.A. is going to have its own specific flavor to it that's going to be different. And so there's going to be a ton to appreciate about that for as different as it's going to be, because it's just the history of the city is obviously a lot different than the history of Paris, and the flavor of it, the culture of it is all a lot different, but it's going to be cool and different and fun in its own way.
I tell people that if you can get to Olympics, especially a summer games, you go because you're watching these culminating moments of people's lives over and over, right, over again, every day, emotionally drained. What comes to mind when I say that? Because, you know, sometimes it's not an American that is making the movement, but you're there with glassy eyes watching it.
No, I think, and again, that I didn't necessarily understand going in how much watching all the Oregon kids was going to be just so enriching and really bring the experience to life and kind of personalize it, not just as a viewing from a viewing aspect, but as a, you know, participatory aspect. I mean, we've got an incoming women's basketball transfer, Lisa Mebius, who played on Germany's 3-on-3 team that won the gold medal. And, you know, my wife works with women's basketball, and so they've got a relationship already in terms of getting her here, getting her moved to Eugene and where she's going to live. And so we got to meet up with her and just hang out and, you know, just how blown away she was by the fact that, you know, she won a gold medal. I mean, to know somebody kind of on that level and to be able to celebrate them and celebrate their achievement. You know, we were at the track when Cole Hawker won his gold medal. I happened to run into his dad a couple of different times throughout the trip. And, again, to have kind of these, even, you know, not the most in-depth personal connections in a lot of cases by any means, you know, to run into Sabrina Ionescu's family, you know, and, out at the Team USA basketball games we attended, you know, to be sitting outside the basketball venue at one point waiting for another game to start and Satu Sabali walks by and sees us and just lights up and wants to get a selfie with us. You know, it's like you're reminded of how athletics can really bring people together and form this community. And it's part of what we love about it is you have this sense of connection with people that you might otherwise not have a connection with. But that's part of what we love about sports and being sports fans.
Rob Mosley with us. He's the editor-in-chief, GoDucks.com, formerly with the Eugene Register Guard. You know, the Big Ten Conference, you mentioned it, becomes official in early August. Now comes a football season. We've talked about season ticket sales with Rob Mullins. And I'm just curious in general what you're seeing as far as engagement on the website, engagement with the social media accounts. Have you seen an uptick there?
You know, I don't do too much of a deep dive into a lot of those analytics, but I think, you know, if you just look at the documentary series that the video department's doing, that the team out west from this preseason camp, and you see viewership on that, you know, it's obviously been really well received. I just think, yeah, there is a level of excitement about the start of this season because of the quality of the team and you know, the energy that Coach Lanning brings to everything he does, but you know, the recruiting he's done, and you know, fans who follow that know that, you know, they're getting it done at an elite level in recruiting. You know, coming off a couple of really good seasons with, you know, a couple of bowl victories, and then the momentum created by the entering the Big Ten and what that means, the fact that Ohio State's coming here, and this anticipation for that game is just unlike anything anybody's ever really seen around here. So. Yeah, there's no doubt that the excitement is palpable. I don't have a ton of data myself to pass along, but I think just anecdotally, yeah, there's no doubt that excitement is just through the roof.
Yeah, the documentary series.
The opening game coming up against Idaho, and you know, there might be some years when you don't necessarily expect that game to be the most well attended, and it's, you know, it's going to sell out. You know, people are buying standing room only seats. For that. So that just tells you, I think, all you need to know about the level of anticipation.
That documentary series is brilliant. I've talked about it. I said, you know, if other schools need to be looking at what Oregon's doing, and that is high-end stuff that's done right. They're telling their own story. They should be. Meanwhile, I got a chance to sit down with Dylan Gabriel, Jeffrey Bassa, among others, at Media Day, and, you know, get to know those guys a little bit. It's just interesting to me. You're watching Bo Nix go off to the NFL, and it's Bo Nix, and here comes Dylan Gabriel. And I don't know, Rob, I said at the end of last season, oh, we'll never see another guy start 60 games, and here comes Dylan Gabriel. He's going to start 60 games if he stays healthy. What do you make of that transition? Is you know, because people are kind of expecting Dylan Gabriel to be Bo Nix, but I'm like, man, that was a lot of production from Bo last year.
It was. I mean, you've interacted with them both, so you know kind of how different – just their personalities are. I mean,
yes.
You know, Bo, very straight-laced, very genuine in that regard. That's who he was. Dylan, a little more easygoing, a little more laid back. That's, you know, that's genuine. That's who he is. You know, I think the commonality that impressed me about both of them is that they both came in for spring, and you might have, you know, conventional wisdom or whatever, a bad assumption might have led you to think, okay, they're going to come in thinking, I'm the guy. I need to get all the first team reps. This is my team. I'm going to put my stamp on this and take the reins right off the bat. And from my perspective, at least, both of them were willing to say, oh no, you know, I gotta earn this. I'm comfortable competing. I'm comfortable getting the number three reps some days or for some period of practice, because, you know, I need to earn it. And the other guys need a shot with the first group to show what they can do with other players of that caliber. But then I think in both cases too, as the summer wore on and you got into preseason camp, and we're seeing it with Dylan the last couple of weeks, or at least I have since I got back from Paris, is just, you know, all that experience they've banked throughout their careers just really starts to show. I mean, you just can't put a price on the kind of experience both those guys brought to Oregon when they got here and just how much of a separator that is. So, you know, again, in both cases, not really taking anything for granted, not assuming anything, but then having their experience pay off and really show as the season approached, I think that's a commonality about the two of them.
How's the receiving core look? On paper, I'm thinking this might be the best group Oregon's ever had.
Yeah, they're elite. I mean, Evan Stewart, you know, to pair him with Tez Johnson, you've just got two incredibly, incredibly explosive guys. Trayshawn Holden has impressed me a ton. You know, when I think of guys who have improved the most kind of year over year from like this time last year to this time this year, I mean, I look at a guy like Austin Novosad, a quarterback who has been very competitive throughout this offseason with Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore. I look at a Devin Jackson at linebacker who kind of was just a fast guy before and now looks like a really fast linebacker. And Trayshawn Holden's consistency, explosiveness as another option with that group is just really, really impressive. And the tight end group, you know, Terrence Ferguson, we know is one of the best in the country. Pat Herbert, you know, really developed last year as a guy who could not only be a line of scrimmage guy, but also catch the ball and make some plays himself. But then Kenyon Sadiq, this young kid, just a freak athlete who you know, kind of like Devin Jackson, is starting to look like not just like a great athlete in football pads, but a guy who knows what to do with that athleticism and make himself a great football player with it. You know, he's been exciting to watch too.
They've got the players. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what they can get out of them. Obviously, that comes back to coaching. You've been around. You've been around this program longer, I think, than anyone else from an editorial standpoint, and you've watched coaches coach. What do you see in Dan Lanning in this fall camp, maybe, that you know, that is notable to you?
Well, it's always kind of hard for me just because this is the only program I've ever covered. This is the only program I've been covering this fall, for instance. So one thing that's enjoyable is, like, you know, when NFL scouts come through and, you know, maybe there's a few NFL scouts who worked here, you know, were like operations people in our football program and have passed through and just catch up with those guys. But then hear how, hey, I've been up and down the West Coast and nobody's practicing like Oregon's practicing, you know, just with the intensity and the, you know, their reps they're getting. And that starts with Coach Lanning and just the tone he sets. And, you know, his ability to be just a relentless competitor while also having, you know, a deeply, genuinely human side that I think all of us have seen, you know, time and time again from him. It almost feels too good to be true. I was talking to somebody else who's been around this department for a couple decades recently, like, you know, with the way things went down with Coach Taggart, with Coach Cristobal, and you understood that those guys got like the one opportunity that was going to pull them away from Oregon. And so you don't necessarily fault them for it, but you also, it's like, you're also almost has a little PTSD. You almost like, yeah. Coach Lanning, right. Again, it almost seems too good to be true in just terms of, you know, the combination of attributes he has and then the loyalty that he's demonstrating to this department and really making it sound like, you know, he's a duck and this is going to be his last job. So it's a pretty special time. He's a pretty fun guy to be around.
I think the only job I worry about is the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, I'm looking at Andy Reid and going, he's going to be there. And, you know, Dan Lanning seems happy where he is. But 10 years from now, if the Kansas City Chiefs call him, I don't know if that little Dan Lanning from suburban Kansas City is going to pick up the phone when they call. Rob Mosley with us, GoDucks.com. All right, so the season, I like the way the season unfolds with, you know, the non-conference games. It's, you know, the Big Sky opponent, Boise State, the Civil War game, and then the conference games that happen before October 12th. I just think it unfolds. But what are you looking for? What's the journalist Rob Mosley looking for as he watches Oregon in the early part of the season?
Well, I guess, you know, when you look at this team, the amount of attention it's getting, the rankings, I mean, obviously it all seems quite well deserved, but you just know that some sort of a hurdle is going to, you know, some bump in the road is going to develop. You know, I think I was listening to you and Wilner the other day talk about, you know, there's probably some game on the schedule that you're not even sure which one it is, but it's like, yeah. You know, there's some game's going to prove tougher than you might have thought going in. And so, yeah, you look at the schedule and you like the way it sets up, but then you also know that could mean it's one of those games, you know, that's like, wow, you know, Ducks didn't come out, you know, with you know, performing like you thought they would that day, and the other team came out with their hair on fire, and, oh, you've got a battle now. How do you respond to that? And, you know, the expectations everyone had for how a game was going to play out go out the window, and how do you respond to that? So, you know, I think that's what I'll be looking for, more than just like one specific game or opponent. Just like, you know, adversity is going to present itself. And so how is this team, you know, the staff's doing everything they can right now in terms of team building, culture, all that, to create an environment in which a team can respond to adversity. But, and you know, until it's the old, you know, until you get punched in the mouth, you don't know how you're going to react type of a thing. You know, when does that happen? You know it's going to happen. When does that happen, and how does the team respond? Yeah, you know, it's probably more of a general answer than anybody's really looking for. But I think history tells us, too, that it's just, you know, something's going to happen that you don't necessarily expect. And how are you going to deal with that?
And I think, too, with the expanded playoff, that there's going to be setbacks. There's going to be some teams that lose in week 4, 5, 6 that are able to come back, fight their way back into the playoff picture, fight their way back into a high seed. And just like the NFL, where, you know, I looked at the Chiefs season last year, there were some losses that were strung together in the middle of the year, and they put it together when it counted. I think we're going to see that in college football for the first time. So I think it'll be kind of fun to see that down the stretch. And I told people, I said, you know, October 12th's great. Everybody's got it circled on the calendar. But if things don't go as expected, you can come back from a loss in this kind of format.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly the team's not going to be looking at it through this perspective, nor should they. But I think for fans, you know, for media members, for those of us, you know, who take more of a wider view, a longer-term view, this season's going to feel so much different in that regard. Because also with the move to the Big Ten, I think when you remember the Pac-12, you felt like there were narratives that were baked in as a member of the Pac-12 that were hard to overcome, even if they weren't fair. Yeah. They were realities you had to deal with. So where you, you know, oftentimes you felt like one loss torpedoed your chances, you know, to make the playoff. And, you know, for multiple reasons now, that's not going to be the case. So it is going to feel different in that regard. Obviously, from the team's perspective, you know, you want to win every game. And that's the mentality they have to take. But, I think for the rest of us, it could feel a little bit different in that regard, that one loss doesn't just doom you.
Rob Mosley, GoDucks.com. All right, before I let you go, best meal you had in Paris?
I'm going to forget something, I'm sure. But
where did your mind go when I said that right away?
So one day at this cafe, I mean, particularly early in the trip, you know, I spent over a year on Duolingo trying to pick up some French, and it certainly helped. But menus were pretty daunting. So early in the trip, it was like, oh, Caesar salad, I've heard of that. We'll definitely get Caesar salad. And so we had to tell ourselves, like, hey, let's not live on Caesar salad for the next 2 weeks. Let's broaden our horizons a bit. And so there was a bunch of that. Like, the night of the tennis match, we were at Roland Garros. We went to this nice restaurant and got, like, a seafood dinner. But, like, the seafood came, and it was, like, the shrimp were – it was not, like, peel and eat shrimp. Like, it was, like, the whole shrimp was presented. And it was, like, you had to figure out how to, like, get the meat out of there. So – the presentation was amazing. It ended up tasting great, but, you know, there were some different, you know, cultural elements to the meals we had to deal with. But to answer your question, there was one day, too, kind of like the Caesar salad thing, we got, like, basically, like, teriyaki bowls at this one place, and it was like, something that was relatively familiar. I think that made it taste even better than it actually did.
There you go. I love it. Rob Mosey, I'll see you in the press box. Thanks for joining us.
Sounds great. Yeah, happy to do it. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. There he goes, GoDucks.com. Can follow him on Twitter, at GoDucks. Rob Mosley does a great job. Formerly with the Eugene Register Guard, tremendous respect for him as a journalist. When he was on that beat at the Guard, that he was so good. You had to account for him. You had to compete against him. True competitor and great journalist, Rob Mosley. Thanks to Rob for coming on. Later in the show, another great journalist, Ian O'Connor, who is a New York Times best-selling author. He's got a new book coming out about Aaron Rodgers. You want to learn about Aaron Rodgers? I'm curious about some things. Stick around. He's coming up at 4 o'clock.